Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is How to Behave on heritageradionetwork.org. Every week we deal head-on with the most vexing etiquette and behavior questions that we all face in 21st century America. In other words, we talk about how the world would be a better place if everyone would just behave like I think they should. I'm your host, Brian Kaiser. Today, we have our behavior analysis panel in the house. Carol Todd is a talented actress and the co-owner of Wine Geeks, R. Monk. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Kevin Ferguson is an assistant professor of English at Queens College. It's part of the City University of New York. And he blogs about typewriters in movies. So please try to control yourself and not race to that blog right now. But it's at kevinferguson.com. Is that correct?
KevinLFerguson.com.
KevinLFerguson.com.
But thanks for having me.
.com. Thanks for being here, Kevin. And as always, the research arm of How to Behave, and a woman of a million surprises, Hannah Howard.
Hi. A million surprises.
A million surprises. Yeah. Every week we get off the air and she tells me something that I got wrong about her biography on the air. Today we are talking about how to behave when you are applying for a job. What you should do in your resumes, what you should and shouldn't do while you're in a job interview. Hopefully we'll talk about whether you're the interviewee or the interviewer, what your behavior should be like. So on the phone we have Taylor from goodfoodjobs.com, and she spends a lot of time talking to companies that are doing hiring and people that are trying to get jobs and placing them together. How you doing, Taylor?
Great, thanks, friend. How are you today?
I'm great. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about your website and what makes it different from something just like Craigslist or classified ads?
I most certainly can. So Good Food Jobs, which you can find at goodfoodjobs.com, is an online job search engine specifically geared toward opportunities in sustainable food and or food culture. So we have a really great community of job seekers out there who are not only interested in working with food, but kind of the social mission of food and how it interrelates to various aspects of culture, including politics, economics, the environment, and all of those really interesting things. So we help to curate the selection on the site, and we have an editorial policy that allows us to be able to approve jobs that are the types that we think our users would really be interested in hearing about and learning, and hopefully expanding people's perceptions as to what constitutes a food job.
That sounds great. And that sounds very appropriate for Livia, who we have on the phone with us. Livia, are you there?
Hi, Brian.
How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. So you have been looking for jobs on and off for the last year or so?
For about a year.
Yeah, and I know you have found a job or two, and at least one of them has worked out. But how many resumes do you think you've sent out in the last year?
I think I've sent out close to 120 resumes.
Wow.
Yes. And don't ask how many I've gotten responses from.
And a lot of the jobs you're looking for have been food jobs, right?
Correct.
So have you used Taylor's website?
I have.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I want to talk to the people in the room here with me. I know Carol is also someone who looks for jobs more often than most people, as a talented actress who gets jobs and then goes away to do a show.
Yeah, that's true. I at my high school reunion, my 20-year reunion, I actually won the award for most jobs held in my lifetime. Yeah, they gave me a magic eight ball.
A magic eight ball?
Yeah.
I guess that's a dubious honor, but an honor nonetheless. And Kevin is in a totally different situation. You work in an industry that's got a very specific structure of how and when you look for jobs, right?
We do. It happens once a year, and it's very, very rigid, and it's years-long process, et cetera. So people look for jobs for 4, 5, 6 years, and then you get one, and you hang on to it for life. Yeah. Never let go.
How long have you been in your current job?
I have been at my current job in Queens College since I've been there for, 3.5, 4 years now? And I've actually managed to claw my way up the hierarchical ladder there. So I kind of have a different story for how you normally get into things.
Yeah, that's great. So, Livia, can you tell us a little, like, some of your frustrations and struggles with the finding a job process, and maybe Taylor can give you some advice on how to behave in a way that's going to get you a job, get you that dream job.
I sure can. Well, I have found, coming from a pretty diverse background of food and wine, a lot of time in restaurants in various capacities, that I kept applying to jobs and getting response for sort of managerial positions, and that's not the direction I want to go. And I believe you, Brian, pointed out at some point in the last year that maybe I shouldn't be applying for those jobs. But I think it's very hard if you're just using something like Craigslist or word of mouth in the food industry to not be pigeonholed. And that's why I've found Good Food Jobs to be a wonderful resource.
It's turning into a commercial for Good Food Jobs. You're welcome, Taylor.
I was going to say thank you so much, Livia. I found it very difficult to kind of think outside the box and create my dream job.
Yeah, I think Livia brings up a good point that a lot of people struggle with, which is, you're able to do all sorts of things. How do you narrow it down? Is that fair, Liv?
That's fair.
Taylor, do you deal with that question a lot?
Yeah, I was going to say, you bring up some really good points even to start off with. It almost like opens up a can of worms, and I know we only have a short amount of time, so I'll try and keep it brief. But it's interesting because I deal with a lot of people who are transitioning into food. And there are a few things that I noticed, and one of them is, especially for career changers, a lot of times they might be applying for positions and people talk about them being overqualified. And then there are other people that have very specific experience, and they find that employers are not necessarily, they're almost pigeonholing them into a specific field because they know they have so much experience in that they want to ensure that they're able to utilize that. So I'm going to say probably the most surprising thing that you'll hear, which is, don't solely rely on online job search engines. Like, part of what we do at Good Food Jobs, and I would say the greatest show of the success that we could ever have, is to actually make our online job search engine obsolete. So there's this huge area of interest now where people are looking for jobs and they become very fixated on actual jobs. And in our culture that sort of, really advises people to maximize efficiently and take the shortest route somewhere and be really focused, my biggest advice to people is often to take a step back and take a bird's eye view of the job search approach, and don't be thinking exclusively about jobs, but more often than not, it's so much better to build and cultivate relationships with people. And this takes a little bit of time, but it's really, really important to do, because the more that you build relationships and expand your network, the more that you'll be able to find
jobs that are available before they're even posted, or sometimes even before employers even know that they need a specific position.
You mean they fire somebody to replace them with you if you're doing it right?
Yeah, that's true too. But
you bring up
we see a lot of small food businesses growing now, and there's lots of opportunity for growth and lots of ways for businesses to be really dynamic in the way that they grow. And essentially, we just need more capable, qualified people, specifically in this sort of sustainable food movement.
You bring up an issue that I was going to ask about, which is nepotism, basically. Like, in my career, I own a restaurant now, but I used to work in the entertainment business and work on movies and TV shows, and I got my first job because my college roommate's dad was friends with a producer, and I never got another job in the entertainment industry except through people I knew. And I think that's common in a lot of industries, right?
And now you hire all your friends.
And now I hire all my friends.
Well, I'd say there's a difference between nepotism and the nepotism you create for yourself. I mean, I think what the advice is to put yourself in that position. I'm actually channeling my dad here, who was a high school teacher, and they euphemistically called it the work-study program. And so he was responsible for getting basically like high school dropouts jobs. And his advice was always dress for the next job. There was something about keeping your fingernails clean too, but it was dress for the next job. Always be looking for the next thing. And I think that's a sort of like a way to make, I don't know, self-created nepotism. I don't know if it's...
Yeah, I think like, isn't that what you're saying, Taylor? Like create relationships and build them.
Exactly. And I think the difference between nepotism and dare I say the word networking has a lot of associations with it. But what I like to call making friends is that in the making friends scenario, essentially, there's huge opportunity to be able to get an inside view of what's going on and see where your skill set and your interests can be married with what a particular business might need based on, information that you're able to get via these exchanges. And it doesn't always necessarily mean you're looking to get something from someone, but I think a lot of job seekers also forget that they have a lot to give. So the more that they know about different businesses and organizations and projects that people have, the better suited they are to connect people and use that as a way to sort of fuel their job search and just become more well-known in general and learn a lot of things along the way. So job search is definitely an investment, And, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I always say, especially in terms of the fields that we're talking about, a lot of people, we're talking about sort of slow food and sustainable food and stewardship and these things that are really complex, and then all of a sudden we, revert to soundbite culture and say, oh, well, when we get a job, we have to follow LinkedIn's 5 tips for, figuring out how to get employment. And it's not necessarily like that. It's definitely a lot more complex
So let's talk about that for a second, Taylor. That in the interview process itself, especially when you're talking about the sort of jobs you're talking about, what are the ways that you can get across to people the information that you need to, that you're interesting and you know a lot about food culture in this situation or whatever your culture is? Quickly and effectively.
Yeah, that's a really great question. At Good Food Jobs, we actually just are in the process of hiring our first employee, and we notice a lot through the job search process. And there are things that are really funny, like you could tell, everyone that applied, went to college and definitely took the courses and followed the advice. You saw a lot of the similar phrases, like, I'm an educated self-starter, and you could see a lot of the buzzwords. But the things that were interesting are the things that really came through to us, people that wrote things in a way that made us feel like they understood what we do. They showed a genuine interest in what we were doing. And I think that so many times job seekers really get wrapped up in being professional, I'm using air quotes right now, or following the rules, that they forget that the whole purpose of it is to really establish a genuine connection. And the whole purpose of a resume or a cover letter or any sort of job application is for the person on the other end to want to hang out with you and want to get to meet you.
I think that's a great point. I actually worked for somebody once who said, we only hire people that we would invite to our homes for dinner.
Yes, totally true.
So you're going to spend a lot more time with those people than any dinner guest or your family or... I think that's good to remember while looking for a job, too.
But how does that come across in written documents? I mean, a resume doesn't... You're not inviting the resume out to dinner with you.
Oh. Taylor?
Yeah. That's a really good question.
Maybe we should skip that. You know, I think we can address that in the second half of the show. That's a big question.
But there is one other point I wanted to make, too, because, you know, we were talking about exercising networks before... And there were some things that I noticed in the job search process, and there were people that were really effective in exercising their personal relationships, and then there were other people that were not, and exercised them in a way that made it seem like they were entitled to interviews. And I think that this is really important because it shows the difference between, really knowing that you have a connection to someone that already believes in the same things you do, or you may know of their work or know of them in a personal capacity, and the difference between kind of being turned off from someone. And so the one piece of advice that I would always give is definitely feel free to, you know, reach out to someone you know at a company that you're applying for a job to, or you know, ask a friend to contact them on your behalf, but don't ever circumnavigate the channels that they put in place, because often when people are hiring for jobs, they try and make the process really easy for themselves. It's hard to manage when you have dozens, if not hundreds, of applications coming in. So always make sure that you apply by the set channels, and then in addition to that, you can reach out and say, you know, I'm really interested in this position that you have posted.
So you're saying don't send your resume to somebody's personal email address just because you have it.
Exactly.
If they've got a business address that they've asked you to send it to.
Exactly.
But you do think it's okay to reach out and send a personal email that says, I have sent my resume to...
I think so, because especially when employers are sifting through, like I said, dozens if not hundreds of applications, sometimes it's really nice to have that connection and to be able to look out for it just so that you don't miss it, especially if it's someone that's coming to you recommended from a friend or a colleague. So that can be actually really, really helpful.
All right. That's great. Well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to take some questions from our panel of behavior analysts and talk a little bit more with Livia about her successes in the job hunt. Sorry, Libby, if we made it sound like you look for jobs all the time and never find them. I know you've had some very good jobs.
Now I know what I've been doing wrong all this time.
Yeah, we'll be back in a minute with How to Behave.
Yeah. Well, when them hills turn around, baby, over the road I'm bound.
You're listening to Bye Bye Baby I'm Gone by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Just where I'm going, I may be right or wrong. Where I'm going, yeah, yeah. While you've been wondering, I've been here and gone.
This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. We are here talking about how to behave when you are applying for a job. So I think we probably all have a lot of just basic questions about behavior in job interviews specifically. And for the second half of the show, we have a different professional on as an expert. We are going to have Sarah Vania, the regional HR director of a global humanitarian organization that's based in New York City. Sarah, are you there?
I am, thank you.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hello. I'm great, thank you.
Good. So, we're talking specifically about behavior in looking for jobs and in job interviews. I know, Hannah, you had a couple of questions that are broad but very, very good.
Why, thank you.
Gold star on your question.
It's the million talents.
All right. Should I shoot them in Sarah's direction?
Yeah.
So, Sarah, when you are interviewing for a job, I guess ultimately it's not a volunteer job and you're hoping to be compensated for your efforts. When is the right time to bring up the money question? It always seems like a difficult topic
I like that you think that right at the beginning of Sarah's conversation is when to bring up the money.
Yeah, that's
start,
what I think.
Start with the money, Hannah.
Right.
No, Hannah, that's a great question. Thank you. And it's certainly definitely on the mind of the hiring manager or the recruiter you're speaking to, as well as of course, the candidate. And if it's a skilled recruiter or hiring manager, they'll ask about your salary expectations right up front, because the worst-case scenario is everyone getting excited and then at the very end, when an offer, low-balling the offer and the candidate gets offended or actually not even take it because it's just not realistic. And so I would, as a candidate, I would actually not bring it up at all. And if you are excited about the job and you're going through the interview process, if they don't bring it up, I would actually just keep looking at other jobs and not put too many hopes in that one particular job you're pursuing, but know that it eventually will come up. So it would be considered, I would say, poor manners to be for the candidate to be speaking about money.
But if you are asked, Sarah, about your expectations salary wise, what's the wisest path to take? Are you expected to lowball it or to guess what they are going to offer, or do you tell them what your end goal is?
And if you give them a range, if you say I want to make between 50 and 60,000, can you just safely expect they're going to offer you 50,000?
Not necessarily. I mean, it depends on the integrity of the organization, actually. And an organization who's really serious about bringing in the right kind of talent, which is the kind of organization you'd want to work for, will want to bring that person in for, that is at a rate that is both competitive and also allows for good internal equity. So, for example, that they'll try to make sure that you are, within range of the people who are already there, but not quite a bit over. For fear of offending those who have been there for a while. So there are times, when they will go over because they realize that you bring in much more experience than those who are there. So if you're asked that question, I mean, before you go in, know what is your bottom line? And also, what do you believe where you should be? And then what is your hope? And then, so I think you can give a range. And then also say, but I trust that you will, give me a competitive offer. And so you're leaving some room for negotiation, but also kind of returning the favor and letting them know that you expect to be treated fairly.
Sounds like good advice.
Sounds like great advice. So, Sarah, when we were talking about these like internet common interviewing knowledge, and one of the tips that I always hear is not to talk badly about your former or current employers. That seems to be consensus. However, in my experience, I'm often leaving a job because I'm no longer enjoying working with the people who are my superiors or my colleagues. So how do you handle that? What do you say if that topic comes up? How do you avoid it, or do you avoid it?
Great question. Yes, you avoid it, and I would say it's deadly to be negative about anyone or about your past employer, because, of course, what the interviewer immediately thinks is that when you leave their organization, you'll be thinking poorly about them. And so it's very important to be warm, to be positive, to be very considerate. And if you're leaving because you feel like you've been treated mistreated, or you have terrible coworkers or a manager, or they've been lying to you, leave that. And I think you can just say that although you've appreciated everything you've learned at your past organization or are proud of what you've been able to accomplish, you really are looking for the next step in your career, and you don't feel like your current employer can offer that at this point.
I have a question that might be particularly personal to me, but what if you have just left a job that's an awesome job and everybody knows it and nobody ever quits, and you were fired with extreme prejudice? How do you handle that in interviews?
You're saying you are or are not speaking from personal experience?
I am speaking from very personal experience. I have been the interviewee in situations where they've said, "Why did you leave that job?" And everybody in the industry knows that you don't just leave that job. Mm-hmm. And I've said things like, "I felt like it was time to move on. I learned what I could learn from them, and now I'm looking for new challenges. And I'm applying for a job that's clearly below the level of the challenges I was just in."
Mm-hmm. I guess that's a great question, and I'm a big fan of honesty. With discretion and the diplomacy, but also not to the point where it is killing yourself either. I mean, if you were in a very high-profile job and everyone knows what happened, I think what you can say is, my employer and I had a difference in opinion, and, unfortunately, it didn't work out.
Only people who read the newspaper knew what happened. I always go for the code words. I say things like, "There was a new manager who was hired, and we had a personality conflict." And there's truth buried in that, too.
Yeah. So there is truth in that, but then I'll wonder of, what did you contribute to that personality conflict?
So and best so you, to dance
you really
around.
Good question, Sarah.
It's a different show. Okay. So, Livia, let's get back to you. What are you doing now? You got a good job, right?
I do. After not really finding what I was looking for in New York, came up to Vermont, and kind of using, I'm not going to say nepotism, but my contacts, I landed a job working with Big Picture Farm, which is a goat farm in southern Vermont, and they make goat milk caramels. So I really couldn't have anticipated that I would be making caramel. But
nobody graduates from high school saying, "I really want to grow up and make goat's milk caramel."
I am going to be Willy Wonka and live in Vermont. But
it sounds like a great job.
It's been an awesome job, and it's a small company. It's a growing company, and I'm starting to kind of transition into doing sales for them, which is a little more of my skill set. So it's kind of everything that Taylor was talking about.
That's great. And you got that job not through goodfoodjobs.com, but through connections you just met the owners of the farm through people that you knew, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Sarah, we were talking about this a little bit in the first half. the, you know, that it's smart to go about looking for a job through people you know and to enter with connections. But then that's this great challenge when you want to work for a place that you don't know anybody. And you work for a fairly big organization, and you see lots of resumes for lots of different jobs, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And so what can people who don't have connections, who don't have personal relationships, do to get noticed in the resume process or in the interview process when they get in?
Well, the first thing is to not neglect actually applying online. I myself got into my current organization. I didn't know anyone, and I applied online, and I got a call the next day. And I would consider it my dream job. So, I mean, that is always the first, and, you know, if the job really is open and competitive, they will be looking for at resumes that come in. So don't assume that you have to know somebody to get in. But after you take that first step, and also I would say apply immediately as soon as you see that opening. Don't delay, wonder if you should or shouldn't, because the recruitments happen very quickly. And the faster you get there, the more likely your recruiter or hiring manager will look for that. But your personal network is key. And if you're not on LinkedIn already, make sure you are there and that you have a very good profile. And continue to build that. I mean, I have a lot of people who contact me through friends or friends of friends or friends of acquaintances. And I will always make sure that I'm looking at that. And my promise is always I will not promise anything other than the recruiter will take a look at your resume, which, of course, can make all the difference.
Yeah, and do you, from your point of view, do you see a big difference between if somebody just sends in a resume blind and if somebody says, your friend John knows this person? Mm-hmm. That make a big difference?
It makes a difference in that the recruiter or hiring manager will definitely look at the resume. Unless that person has personally worked with them and can give a very personal recommendation for the quality of their work, it doesn't necessarily give you a leg up in that way. But if you have identified your dream organization, you're really interested, you see a job and have applied for one you think you're very competitive for, but you don't know anyone, it's also okay to send, to apply online, but then to either physically drop off or to send even the physical, via U.S. mail, which seems very old-fashioned. But, these things, they do come, you could send it to the head of the company or to HR. And that physical piece of paper will make its way to the recruiter. We'll physically have to open it and look at it. And so that cannot do harm as long as it's done appropriately and with polite language.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on really quickly to the interview process. Can you tell me a story about some behavior that's totally unacceptable in the interview process, Sarah?
Sure. Well, I think every HR person has the stories that still make them smile or maybe even cry a little bit. And speaking of crying, I did have a candidate who, when I asked them about the toughest decision they've ever had to make in the job, did kind of break down in tears, which did not impress me, especially since, of course, an HR person is regularly making tough decisions. So I did worry about that as well.
That wasn't touching and showing her emotional side.
And you think about HR being people, but I did not want someone that sensitive. So yeah, that was a deal breaker.
My job is the only one where crying in an interview is actually helpful.
Yes, Carol gets asked to cry right now.
The other thing about interviews is to be on time, which seems of course you're going to be on time, but some people are too on time and they come half an hour early. And then the reception announces you, and then the recruiter or the hiring manager gets annoyed because they feel pressured because they know you're waiting out there. Like, being there 10 or 15 minutes ahead of time is fine. However, don't be late. I mean, another story I have is an individual who was scheduled for an in-person interview and minutes before called and said, they couldn't make it, and could they have a phone interview instead? That did not make a good impression.
So I assume they did not get the job.
But the shame of it is that they were actually really competitive, but it put someone else ahead.
That happens to me fairly often, where I put when I put an ad up, I say, please include your resume in the body of an email. Attachments will not be open, and I don't say that because I won't open attachments. I say that because it's a test, and if you can't follow these basic instructions in terms of sending in your resume, you're probably not smart enough to work here. And very, very often I get great resumes that fail that test. They didn't include it in the body of the email. Sort of breaks my heart to not be able to hire them. I'm going to end on that sad note. Everybody in the room is crying now because of that sad story. All right. Well, we are out of time. Thank you very much, Sarah, for talking to us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure, too. Livia Manfredi, thank you for talking to us today about your job search. And Taylor from goodfoodjobs.com. To my behavior analysis panel in the studio today, Carol Todd, Kevin Ferguson, and Hannah Howard. You can always find archived episodes of How to Behave on heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes. I'm Brian Kaiser. This is How to Behave. And remember, there's no crying in job interviews.
Well, Miss Louise, can't you understand? Well, Miss Louise.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.